want to get started opening a Chinese company today, we're going to try our best to shed some light on the various corporate structures Westerners have for opening a company here in China. And thanks for tuning in. It's Global from Asia, episode number 70.
Welcome to the Global from Asia podcast, where the daunting process of running an international business from Hong Kong is broken down into straight up actionable advice. And now, your host, Michael Michelini.
Thank you, everybody, for tuning in today and being here with me. I've been getting more and more requests about mainland China business, and I'm excited for this week's show. But first, some news and updates. I was interviewed by Ali Mona of Limitless Laowai podcast. She's up in Shanghai. She's been cranking out shows like crazy, helping entrepreneurs and expats in China to hear from others and learn and get ideas. I shared on her show about my China tech startup and social media experience and the tough times and the ups and downs that I went through. If you're curious, you can check it out on limitlesslaowai.com/Mike Michelini. I'm also going to link it on the show notes here, and you can hear me spill my guts about my experiences. Also, my friend at shenzhenparty.com just released a book titled Shenzhen, the Book. Pretty awesome name, right? And they're letting me give you guys a first chapter for free. So if you want to head over to the show notes for today's episode at globalfromasia.com/episode70, I'm happy that we're going to have this chance to give you guys a little preview of the ultimate guide about Shenzhen, China. It's going to be on the market, and I'm glad it's there. So now on to the show. I'm meeting more and more people coming into China for the first time to open their businesses, and they're always so full of energy and excitement, but have lots and lots of questions and can easily make some mistakes and get on the wrong track. So the rules have actually gotten easier here in China. So we have Jason Zhou from Beijing Bairei Law Firm to discuss the different choices businesses and entrepreneurs have when opening up the company in China. I know it's going to be a top podcast listened for a long time, and we're not going to hold anything back. Also, after the show, I'm going to go through some of my personal experiences with companies in China that I've set up and how it's changed since I started. So stick till the end, and I'm also going to read a 5-star review we got. I'm excited about that, so stay tuned after the interview. But let's jump in. All right. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in to another Global from Asia podcast. We are here in Shenzhen, China, with Jason Zhou in his law firm now. So thanks for being here, Jason.
Hello, everyone. Okay. Yeah. My name is Jason Zhou. I'm a lawyer based in Shenzhen. Our topic today is about how foreign investors should establish their business presence in China. We know that China has been developing very rapidly in the recent 30 years. And every year it is attracting a large amount of foreign investors. But when investors establish their business presence in China, they should choose the most appropriate for them. So this is what we are going to discuss today.
Yeah, I mean, we were talking before we started recording, and of course, you know, it's going to be impossible to cover all this knowledge and experience in one episode, but we're going to kind of go through the different choices and options that foreigners or non-Chinese have. Also, you know, think we met at a wine and cheese event. So it's a great organization, Shenzhen Party. And Brent connected us, Brent Deverman. So just wanted to give him a quick shout out. I think he's listening too. So thanks again, Brent, for connecting us. So I think first, you know, I have some questions here. But before I even start, is I still hear foreigners, or I guess we'll call foreigners, just so everyone's listening, is non-Chinese. They think they can't even own a company in China, but it is possible, right? You don't have to have a Chinese partner if you are not ready or don't need it. So, you know, that's definitely, just for the record, it's possible for foreigners to own and do business in China.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, actually, when we talk about foreign investors, we actually mean foreign capital, because this is also for investors in Hong Kong, Taiwan. And so we will refer all of them to as foreign investors, that the capital is from overseas of mainland China. So there are typically four kind of business presences for foreign investors in China. The first one is WFOE, which is a wholly foreign-owned enterprise. Also, we have the Sino-Foreign Joint Venture, and we will refer to as JV. Also, there is a representative office of a foreign company, as well as foreign invested partnership enterprise, and this is a very new form of business presence in China. So,
I think maybe also I just want to actually re-clarify Hong Kong and Taiwan is foreign. So some people actually ask me, I also kind of go through some questions people ask me. So just
actually,
say
the foreign investment is about foreign capital.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which means the capital that is not generated in China, that is from overseas of mainland China. So we will usually say about foreign investors. That will include the investors from Hong Kong and Taiwan.
Clear. And it could also be a mainland Chinese person that has a Hong Kong company that then...
Yeah. So for mainland Chinese individual that has a company in Hong Kong, he can use this Hong Kong company to invest back into China again as a foreign investment.
Okay, sure. So, yeah, I'm excited to jump right in, but maybe a little bit more before we get in. How long have these different structures been in existence, you know, in China? I know, like you said, 30 years is so small amount of time. So when did these start to come into play about maybe, are they... I guess a lot of times people wonder when do the rules change and are any ideas of, can you share some perspective of the development over time?
This business presences has been in existence for a very long time. It's only the FIPE, which is a foreign investment partnership enterprise. It's a very new form, which allows Chinese individuals to form an enterprise with the foreign capitals, because in the past only Chinese business entities can form a JV with foreign capitals.
Okay.
So today I will also share some knowledge about the differences of all the business presences in China.
Sure. So I'm wondering which one to start with.
I would like to talk about Wolfie first.
Okay,
because Wolfie, I think, is the most normal practice for foreign investors. Wolfie is short for wholly foreign-owned enterprise, which means all the capital is from overseas. It can be one shareholder or it can be several shareholders, but all of them should be foreign capitals. Yeah. Wolfie is a company with limited liability. As same as other companies with limited liabilities that are invested by Chinese domestic investors, Wolfie is an independent legal person who has its own property and can be independently responsible for the debts it has. The shareholders of the Wolfie is only liable for the debts of the Wolfie extends to the registered capital it subscribes. And so this is most usual practice, because most of the foreign companies, they would not like to bear the responsibility of their subsidiaries in China. So the subsidiaries can handle their own debts and their own legal matters.
So a subsidiary would be underneath a separate company, so there's Wolfie and then a subsidiary? Or is it?
I mean, there's Wolfie as the subsidiary of the overseas company. Can be independently responsible for the debts, which will not affect the liabilities of the mother company.
Okay, clear.
Yeah. So as an independent legal person, it has all the rights as a company in China. For example, it can conduct all kinds of substantial business scopes, except for those are restricted or prohibited for foreign capitals. Yes, it has its own rights to employ their employees and sign labor contracts with them and receive business incomes and issue invoices, fa piao.
Yeah.
So Wolfie is the most usual practice, and their minimum registered capital is not a requirement anymore. So that makes it much more easier for foreign investors to open a Wolfie here.
Yeah, I mean, I have a Wolfie now, and I did it a long time ago, so I had to do registered capital in 2008 when I registered was 100,000 RMB. So now I'm also learning about this. So this is a new change, I think. And maybe we can first talk. Yeah, let's maybe talk. I'm curious, when did that change? Because I know a lot of foreigners have companies now and they've done that. When did that change, or the process of the registered capital?
The registered capital, because China is making reforms on the business registration issues and is encouraging free market. Yeah. This is changed since March 1st, 2014, when the amended company law took effective. And actually, it has been for a trial for around 1 year in Shenzhen before March 1st, 2014. So in Shenzhen, we already have this policy since March 1st, 2013. Yeah. And according to the new policies, there is no requirement on the minimum registering capital. And the shareholders also can arrange their injections of the capitals according to their own plans instead of having to inject the capitals in required time period.
Got it. Yeah, I remember when I did the 100,000, which is the lowest amount possible for it depended also on what type of business you did then. So like I did import and export consulting company.
Yeah, that's a very big change, because in the past the minimum registered capital is quite different for different kind of a business, such as a manufacturing business. It requires at least 500,000 RMB. As
importing, they ask me for 300,000.
Yeah, for wholesales, for retails. They have different requirements.
So now it's
Yeah, because like I said, they are encouraging the market. Yeah.
For anyone that did it before, it still stays the same for them, right? Maybe some listeners haven't finished their capital investment. Maybe they're halfway. They still need to finish what they started, right?
They still have to finish what they have started. Yeah.
Okay. And then maybe we can talk about some restricted industries, or how do I know I would
restricted areas. So this is actually I would like to talk about the JV.
Okay sure.
Because in a JV it allows foreign capital to involve in some of the restricted areas, especially those are restricted for Wolfies, for pure foreign capital. A JV is also a company with limited liability, but that is co-established by foreign investors.
So it means joint venture.
Joint venture. Joint venture. Yeah. And Chinese domestic business entities. You know that in the JV, joint venture, the Chinese side can only be a business entity. It cannot be an individual investor. Yeah, the establishment process of a Sino-foreign joint venture is almost the same as the WOFI, which first needs the approval from the government bureau, which is the authority for the foreign investment. Yeah, and the JV is established for the purposes for the foreign capitals to enter into some of the restricted areas that a WOFI can't.
I think a bank is one I think.
Yeah, bank. Also such as gas exploration, market survey, higher education, entertainment venue. Yeah, entertainment business places.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think what's an example of entertainment?
Yeah, entertainment.
Like KTV?
KTV, is a typical entertainment place, but restaurant is not an entertainment. Just a normal food service. Yeah. This is very strange, because in most of the other countries, I think there are also restricted areas for foreign capitals, but they might not be so wide as in China. I think there might be some of the causes that first of all, maybe the China government wants to protect the local capitals in certain areas, or politically,
yeah.
Sometimes some of the areas are very sensitive nowadays for foreign capital, sure. Such as publications. Yeah,
media.
Yeah, media publications, they are still restricted for foreign capital.
Yeah,
but with a JV, you are able to enter into a lot of different business areas that are restricted for WFIs. We have a catalog for the guidance of foreign investment industries. This guidance shows all the areas that are encouraged, restricted, and prohibited for foreign capitals. Yeah.
Okay. So, is that in English?
Yeah, we have an English version.
Okay.
Yeah, so everyone can refer to that guidebook.
Is that digital or paper? Or
digital.
Oh, great.
Yeah,
maybe
digital.
We could include a link to it in the show notes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great. So that's JV, joint venture.
Yeah.
And
there is the representative office.
I have one maybe question about a JV.
Okay.
How many shares does each partner have to have, like the local Chinese partner? Is it 50-50 or...
Yeah, for most of the business areas, we don't have the limitations about the shares. Yeah, but for some of the business areas, we require that the Chinese capital to be the major shareholders.
Major shareholders. Can maybe, I think I learned best by examples.
For example, to open a cinema.
Okay.
Yeah, the Chinese side should have the major part. Yeah.
Major being 51?
51, yeah.
Okay. And then, so there could be other types of businesses where the Chinese partner is 10, 15%?
Yeah, it's possible for them to have less shares. Mm-hmm. Yeah, for some of the business areas that are not so sensitive.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sure, it's good. I mean, I know we can't go into so much detail on such a short show, but also about the invested capital, would both sides match the amount of money invested? So say it's 1 million RMB capital that the partners want to put in. I guess it doesn't have to match the shares, right? Or does it?
It does not have to match the shares, but actually the property invested will match the shares, but you can have different rates for bearing the debts or getting the profits according to your own agreements.
Yeah. Okay, clear, great. So then for my recap so far, we talked about WFI and JV. So
yeah,
WFI is 100% foreign investment.
Yeah, that's
JV
correct.
JV would have at least some Chinese local investment.
Yeah,
and the reason to maybe do that is for certain restricted industries.
Yeah,
to
local,
do a JV.
Local protections. Yeah.
Okay, and then
representative office is the second normal practice for foreign investors than WFI. Yeah, it's just an liaison office of an overseas company or business entity in China. And it is set up for the main purposes of market development or supplier management in mainland China. Rep office does not have the qualification to as an independent legal person. Yeah, it does not have its independent property, and it cannot be independently responsible for the debts it has in China, which means the company who set up this RO will be responsible, will be wholly responsible for all the responsibilities, for all the obligations of the rep office in China.
Okay, so like say it's a U.S. company opens a RO, and then they're liable for the debt. Yeah. So it goes back. It's not like limiting the liability in China. Yeah. It goes
so
to the parent.
When the RO has to pay for some of the debts for example, the administrative penalties, the U.S. company will be solely responsible for that.
Okay. I've heard a lot of my friend. I never had an RO, so I went directly to Woofy. But like you said, it's so you can't sell in China,
you can't
right?
Sell in China with your RO.
You can or
I don't. You can't.
You cannot. Yeah.
Yes.
Exactly. You can't issue the fa piao, which is like the receipt.
Yes.
So
RO is not allowed to involve in any substantial businesses in China, and the most important of all is that it does not have the legal qualification to hire the employees by themselves. It has to hire the employees via stipulated human resource companies. Yeah, so that makes a lot more expenses for them.
Yeah,
even though it is not an independent business entity, which means it does not generate revenues by itself, it still has the related taxes in China.
Yeah.
So it has the business tax and also the enterprise income tax. These taxes are not based on the revenues it generates, but based on the costs. Yeah, the daily cost.
Got it. And I've heard my friends that have these complain about that because you pay a tax on how much you spend, not how much you earn.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is very interesting because the China government is trying to calculate the revenues that made by the mother company, depending on the cost of the representative office. They think that if you spend more here, you must have been generating more revenues from China too.
Interesting. Yeah. So just to maybe recap my sides, the main difference here is it's much more restricted to have an RO, which is a rep office, representative office, or RO is the same. Is you can't hire directly. You can have people work in your office, but they're contractors with HR company.
Yes, stipulated human resource companies.
So you'd have to pay an HR company to pay the salary.
Yeah, you have to pay for the salary, pay for the social insurance, and beyond that, you have to pay for the service fees. For the human resource companies, they have a name as FESCO.
Okay.
Yeah, Foreign Enterprise Service Company, like that.
Got it. Yeah, so I think mostly people do this because they don't want to invest in the Woofy, but now that there was no registered capital for a rep office, but there's now no registered capital for a Woofy. Yeah. Do people still even open ROs?
Or RO is easier to be liquidated, than a Woofy. Also, it does not have to be approved by the authorities that to approve the foreign investment. So it's easier to set up a Woofy here in China, but it has some conditions about the mother company, that the mother company has been in existence for at least 2 years and has a very stable business address. And Woofy does not have that conditions. So based on the actual situations, it might be even easier for you to establish a Woofy in China.
Great. This is really great. Okay, I'm going to move. Is there any other points when we move to the next?
The foreign investment partnership enterprise. And this is a very new type of... because partnership enterprise is previously only available for Chinese. Yeah, two Chinese people can form a partnership enterprise. They share the profits and they bear the debts according to the partnership agreement that they both executed. Yeah. So this is open to foreign individuals. So in this business presence, it allows foreign investors to form a partnership enterprise with either Chinese business entity or a Chinese individual. This is usually existed in restaurants, consultation companies, which is based on the techniques of the foreigners. For example, if you have a very good talent in opening restaurant or opening a design company in designs, you can open a foreign investment partnership enterprise with Chinese business entities or individuals, because it allows you to use your technologies or use your talents to invest in the enterprise. Yeah. And a partnership enterprise is also not a legal person. Yeah. It does not have the enterprise income tax. So the partners of the enterprise will be personally responsible for the profits they get from the partnership enterprise. Yeah. And also, there are typically two kind of partnership enterprises in China. One is a general partnership enterprise, and one is a limited partnership enterprise. For a general partnership enterprise, all of the partners are general partners, which means all the partners are responsible, will have a joint and severe responsibility for wholly responsible for the debts of the partnership enterprise. And in a limited partnership enterprise, there are general partners as well as limited partners. The limited partners will only be responsible for the debts of the partnership enterprise extend to the capitals they subscribe. Yeah. Also, there is no minimum capital requirement for a partnership enterprise.
Yeah, so to me it sounds similar. Like in at least in the US, there's general partnerships.
General partnerships.
Or LLPs, limited liability partnerships.
Yeah.
So usually, like, I think it's like it's a service, like law firms, consultants.
Yeah.
Like these kind of specialists usually set these up. Honestly, I'm not, at least in the US, I'm not sure why this different than just opening a company, but maybe because of taxes, you can just have the money flow directly to the individual rather than have an enterprise tax.
Yeah, because there is no enterprise income tax for such business presence.
Okay. Yeah. This is really great. I did have on my list, I don't know if we want to talk about it, but VIE, which maybe isn't even really legal.
VIE is, I know that it's a legal firm in the United States that the accounting books can be combined together for a company, and it's a VIE subsidiary. Mm. Yeah, but in China, this is something that is not completely according to the law, because we only admit those shareholder controls, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, because the contract is something that can be violated.
Yeah.
Yeah. So VIE is a usual practice in the US, I think, that it is usually used for the foreign capitals to enter into some of the businesses that are completely restricted for foreign capitals.
Yeah, I guess we don't go so deep, but basically what I understand is this, like you said, a restricted, I usually think an internet company in China, like foreigners can't own an internet
also
company.
Like telecommunication, value-added services, mm-hmm. that are completely restricted for foreign capitals.
Yeah.
So if you want to invest in this field, you probably have to find some Chinese to establish the company, and then you can control the company via some VIE structures.
Which is not legal in China.
Yeah, it's
enforced in
China. It's not. It's
not recognized, maybe.
Yeah, it's not normal practice in China, but
okay. In
the US, they will deem this VIE controlled China company as your subsidiary and their revenues as yours. But in China, this is just an agreement. Yeah.
Got it. Okay. Yeah. Let's just stop at that because it's a little bit complicated and not common. So we're talking. I have a few more questions. It's been amazing already. Interview. So thanks so much for sharing. Maybe we talked about some of the restricted industries, and we talked about reasons why maybe these are restricted in China.
We are gradually open to the world, but we are not that open right now.
Yeah, this is slowly opening.
Yes, slowly opening.
So I think our second section is to talk about we're entering 2015, a new year, both Western New Year and Chinese New Year. Is coming while we're recording. And what are some tips maybe we can give some expats or foreigners in China for the new year?
Yeah, in the new year, I think legal tips. I know that there are a lot of more opportunities in China, including the career opportunities or business opportunities. But the legal tips, the latest two laws that are effective, I think will most affect experts' life. I think one is the Exit and Entry Administration Law that was amended to be effective since July the 1st, 2013.
Okay.
Yeah. This is the major law I think an expert should know about. Yeah, because
it has
a lot of amendments, and especially more strict about the visa, about the residence issues. Yeah, and the second is that in the past, the foreign employees are not forced to attend into the social insurance programs in China, but the government now require all the companies established in China, when they hire foreign employees, they have to attend the social insurance programs for them. Okay. Yeah, this is another one big change.
Okay. Yeah. So what was that? Can we maybe go through the first one again? What was the first?
The Exit and Entry Administration Law.
Exit and Entry Administration Law. So yeah. That's about like coming in and out of China.
Coming in and out of China because the visa types has been changed. Also, the compensations for breaking these rules has been raised a lot. Okay.
So I mean like overstaying?
Yeah, like overstaying. In the past, you maybe fined 1,000 RMB for overstaying, and they still will give you the visa next time. But nowadays, they may fine you like 10,000.
Wow.
Yeah. And you may be restricted to apply for a visa anymore.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's more strict than ever.
Okay. Yeah. So I've had friends that have overstayed before that law. I mean, I haven't known anybody lately, but they would pay per day that they overstayed a fee, but they would get their passport back and they would be able to get new visas. So now it's more of a problem than before. Okay.
Yeah.
So thank you so much, Jason, for coming on the show. It was really amazing. I'm sure listeners got a lot of knowledge and are some interested to contact you. Maybe you can share more about you and your services.
I'm based in Shenzhen. Our law firm is called Beijing Barry Law Firm Shenzhen. And I'm specialized in company law, foreign investment, comprehensive corporate legal services, and projects like liquidation, merger and acquisition, and franchising, or business matters. Also, our lawyers are specialized in different areas, including intellectual property, real estate, labor law, family law, etc. I have established a team of English-speaking lawyers that can help the expats in China in their personal and business issues. And also, I work for a company called Shenzhen Commerce. Actually, it's a business cooperation because they are helping the foreign investors to establish their business presences, like Wofi in China. I am retained as their chief legal advisor. My team will help them to review all the legal documents, and they have their own people to handle the formalities in the different authorities in different cities. So this, I think, assures the quality of the services too.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, because you know that there were mainly two kind of companies or firms that do this kind of service. One is some of the agents, and the other is law firms like us. Yeah, but this provides an opportunity for the clients to have equal services as a law firm, but enjoy much lower rates.
Sure.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, because basically, like, an agency usually is lower price, but they might not know the legal as well.
And they sometimes prepare for the documents so very carelessly. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes, definitely. Of course, there's a lot of entrepreneurs listening to every dollar they're watching closely. But I think with law, right, especially in China, if you make, it can cost you a lot more money later if you make a mistake.
Actually, our law firm is cooperating with Shenzhen Commerce because we think we can help a lot of our foreign investors to legally and more efficiently operate their business in China. We not only help them to establish their business, we also help them in their legal consultations and the consultation on the accounting, audit, taxation, trademark registration or patent registration, a lot of related areas. Yeah, in order to help them to grow in China.
Great. So we'll link up those websites on the show notes and any other contact information you want to share.
Okay. I can leave my personal information and the contact information of shenzhencommerce.com. Also, I have established a new WeChat account. Yeah, the name of the WeChat account is SZ Legal 2015. Yeah, this WeChat number is established to help the experts in China to provide them with the free initial legal consultations. Yeah, I hope this can help them. Yeah.
Great, thanks. And also, I forgot to ask, but some people like are in Shanghai or Beijing. Is the law the same or is the policy the same or opening?
The policies are the registration, business registration policies nowadays are the same because it has been trialed in Shenzhen for 1 year.
Okay.
Yeah, Shenzhen is always the forerunner.
Great.
Yeah, of China. It's the special economic zone. And when China has some policies that are very active, they intend to have it trialed in Shenzhen first before it is put into whole China. Yeah, they are the same, and I can also provide the legal consultations to the experts from all over China.
Yeah. Great to know, because I know we have listeners all over China. So thanks again, Jason. Thanks so much, and have a great day.
Okay. Thanks, Michael.
All right.
Yeah.
Thank you, Jason, for sharing so openly. And please, everybody, take time to shoot him a thank you note for coming onto the show. He was still figuring out what is a podcast. He hadn't heard of that before, and I explained it to him as an online radio. And it was really unfortunate is that this podcast is blocked inside of mainland China, so he couldn't even listen to other shows to get an idea of how the show would go. But I think he did a great job, and I think it would be awesome if he got a whole bunch of thank you messages from you guys for being on the show. He'd be so ecstatic and probably wouldn't know where it came from. So I said at the beginning I would share some of my experiences with Chinese company setup. So I did set up my own Woofy in 2008. It was a wholly foreign-owned entity. Cost me quite a bit of money then, and I was always thinking I was doing it early and it would maybe be more expensive now, but it seems like the opposite. You can never predict what happens here in China, right? So I did the smallest capital investment company, 100,000 RMB, which is about 15,000 US dollars now. And it was $13,000 then due to currency exchange changes. And it was a consulting and import-export company. It's still here today. It's called Shadstone Import and Export Shenzhen Company Limited. You notice you have to have the function of import-export, and Shenzhen, where the city is, it's a requirement in the naming for Chinese companies. And like I said, it's still in operations. I use it here to get my work permit and do some consulting projects and be legal in China. And also, just to note, it's fully owned by my Hong Kong company, Shadstone Limited. Like I've said in other shows, it was I originally was going to come here and open up the Chinese Woofy as an American. I had no idea what I was doing when I came from the U.S. to China, and I thought Hong Kong was just like a middleman company, country, you know, place. And I thought, but my lawyer, who I paid a lot of fees to, did help me out and did advise me correctly to open up this Hong Kong company that would then own the Woofy here in China. And it helps me a lot when ownership changes and other changes. It all happens up in the Hong Kong structure, and the Hong Kong company or limited completely owns the Chinese Woofy. So there's not a lot of paperwork to do in China. Also, some other advice is, friends I've known have kind of saved money or thought it would be easier just to open a rep office, a RO, instead of a Woofy. But a few of them have gone back and changed their, you know, company from a rep office to a Woofy because it was a lot more hassle. Luckily, I never bothered with a rep office. I just went straight to Woofy because it seems like you don't hire the workers directly. You have to pay this government office, labor-like office, and then they pay the workers for you. And then you got to pay a fee for that. Plus, you got to pay tax on the cost of your China operations, not on the income. So it just really seems limiting and sucks, to be honest. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't like to be so firm, but I haven't heard people that have had good experiences and recommend opening rep offices. And now our 5-star review. I'm really happy we're getting these on a regular basis. It's from Chi in Hong Kong. He's been a longtime listener and a great supporter of the show and everything. And I'm glad he came through and took time to leave a review. So let's read it out loud. Must listen to for anyone want to do business in Hong Kong. What an insightful podcast on everything on running a business in Hong Kong. I was worried if I was getting ripped off from my company auditing. Listening to the show gave me a much better idea of what costs what. Thanks, Global from Asia. Oh, thank you, Chief. Really appreciate it, buddy. And that's all we have today, folks. Thanks again for tuning in. I feel like I was blah, blah, blahing a little bit longer on this intro and a recap, but I think I kept it action-packed and valuable. Again, feedback, 5-star reviews, any kind of suggestions for episodes, always appreciated. And we got lots in the queue. So see you next week. Bye-bye.
To get more info about running an international business via Hong Kong, please visit our website at www.globalfromasia.com. That's www.globalfromasia.com. Also, be sure to subscribe to our iTunes feed. Thanks for tuning in.